Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. And podcasts of prior shows are also available there under Public Affairs. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com, yourfinancialchoices.com. I do have to, put out a note to our listeners who have sent email questions, because I just found out this afternoon that many of my Your Financial Choice emails were going into my junk email. So I attempted to retrieve the ones that I could, but the emails are only saved for a very short period of time in that folder. So I might have missed some. But I will regularly check that now. So I apologize. I didn't even realize I had a junk email folder. I have another spam email folder that I look at from time to time. But so I was able to retrieve a few of the questions and respond back. So thank you for your patience on that, because it's been a little bit of time has passed. I generally try to take care of those right away. So if you do have questions that, you may not want to ask live on air, or even, summarize it for Lori to write down and bring in to me, you can certainly send questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. Now, let's talk about retirement accounts tonight. And by the way, as I've mentioned each week, if you have tax questions, you're certainly welcome to call. The last 2 weeks we dedicated to listeners' tax questions, but during tax season, I'm open to, questions. I just figure maybe the listeners don't want to keep hearing the, listeners' questions. So came up with retirement accounts. The reason I thought it would be important to talk about this tonight is because we do get a lot of questions about retirement accounts during tax season. And, I am a little bit surprised sometimes that people don't always know what kind of options they have around retirement accounts. They don't always know what types of accounts there are. And I realize, if you go to work for an employer who has an employer plan, and you might know then that you have a 401k through work, you've never maybe even had to think about an IRA or a Roth IRA. And so I thought, rather than, continue to make assumptions about what people know and don't know, I thought we could talk about some of the basics around retirement accounts, what kind of retirement accounts we have, some big picture items, and how you can maybe with this information do a little extra retirement planning for yourself, depending on, your own circumstances. I thought it might be, very informative for you to learn a few things about other kinds of retirement accounts than what you might currently have. So let's talk about that. So different types of retirement accounts and some of the features. High level, we hear about IRAs. Well, to kind of differentiate how we talk about an IRA, I'm going to give some extra names to them. So first, an IRA is an individual retirement account. So individual retirement account, that's going to help us differentiate from an employer-provided plan. an individual retirement account, and we typically talk about an individual retirement account as a traditional IRA. A traditional IRA, and typically that is an IRA that someone, you know, who doesn't have an employer plan can make a contribution to. And I'm going to talk more in detail about that as we go through the show on each of these. So right now, I'm just going to be kind of high level. So traditional IRA, and it can be both deductible and non-deductible. And that is like a big asterisk that we want to talk about as we go through the show. A big item that I think a lot of people aren't aware of. That could be something that you really might want to know more about, a non-deductible IRA. And of course, we also have a Roth IRA, which I'll talk about. But right now we have a caller on line one. We have Carolyn from Salersburg. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm a little confused. I'm 61, so I'm really starting to think about winding my career down.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'd like to do is go part-time toward the end of it before I stop working altogether.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering, what does Social Security base what they pay you every month? I mean, I know besides when you start taking it, obviously, if you can put it off, you get more. But is it the last 3 years you're working? Is it your three? And it might not even be three. That's what I'm not clear on.
Yeah.
Is it your highest earning years?
It's more than three, and it is your highest earning years, but it's your highest 35 years.
Oh. Oh, dear. I was quite off. Okay.
Very different than what we typically see where someone might look at for a pension. They might say your last 5 years or your highest 5 years or something like that. Social mm-hmm. Security actually looks at your last 35 years
35.
And your highest years, as a matter of fact, of that. So sometimes it can really make a difference if you, I mean, not a huge difference, but it could make a difference if you want to put in an extra 3 or 4 years at your, you know, last highest earning pay, if maybe in your, you know, first years you weren't earning as much. Like some people might not have really started working until they were 30 or 35. So if you're going to retire at 65 and you only had really high earnings, you know, starting at 35, well, that's only 30 years of high earnings. But anyway, I'm confusing that subject. But it's the highest 35 years. But another thing to keep in mind, Carolyn, is that the calculation of how they calculate the benefit is complicated. And it is on their website, ssa.gov. But they give more emphasis to like the first part of income. And I'm going to make this up. This is totally made up. But let's say someone makes $40,000 and, you know, over 35 years, they did, you know, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35. They kept increasing. Social Security will put more emphasis and make more of your benefit formula based on, let's say, the first $20,000 of income. And then a little bit, you know, maybe a little bit less on the next 10,000, and then a little bit less the more you make. So someone who made, let's pretend, $40,000 a year for 35 years, and someone who made $250,000 a year for 40 years, I mean, obviously the person who made the maximum benefit is going to get a really good Social Security, but it's not pro rata. You know, it doesn't mean you're going to get like 1/6 of what that person who made a ton of money is going to get, because the pay that Social Security looks at has more emphasis on the first tranche of income. Does that make sense?
It does. So does that lead me to think that if I do go part-time, say I work full-time for another 3 years.
Right.
And then I do like 2 or 3 years part-time, that won't hurt me that much?
It might not be as much as you might think, correct.
Okay.
That's what I wanted to emphasize. It might not move the needle on your benefit as much as you might think.
Okay.
And you can always do an estimated calculator on the Social Security website as well.
Oh, OK. Okay. So if you can figure out what you'd be making if you went part-time and fat plug those numbers in.
Right, right. And if you have registered for an account on Social Security's website, it's called like My Account, then they will already have all that information in there. And then I think you can play with, you know, scenarios of what you expect that you might have over the next, you know, few years.
Okay.
Okay.
Great.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks, Carolyn. Thanks for calling. Have a good night.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Folks, we are talking about retirement accounts or tax questions if you have, or that great question by Carolyn. I think that's important, and that could be something we could cover on a future show as well. We haven't talked about Social Security in a while. It might be time to do that. So we're at our first break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Connect to WDIY with our new app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store and enjoy the great music, news, and programs you love on the go. The easy-to-use app is where you can listen to WDIY live or your favorite music shows on demand with our two-week archive feature. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. If you have questions, you're welcome to give us a call. Talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, give your question to Lori C. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. In talking about retirement accounts, I mentioned first high level, some of the different kinds of plans that there are, and then I want to get into some of the details on them. We talked about traditional IRA. Typically, the traditional IRA is one where you're going to get a tax deduction on your tax return, and then that money grows and grows tax deferred until you take it out, and then it's all income taxable. For the astute listener, you also heard that I might have said something called a non-deductible traditional IRA, meaning maybe you didn't get the deduction for it. That's a big item I want to talk about. You may not have gotten a deduction for it, which means you have basis in it. You used after-tax dollars. Well, the earnings in that traditional IRA, if we keep it in the traditional IRA, even if we have basis, the basis eventually comes out not taxable, but the earnings would continue to be income taxable. So we're going to talk about that, the difference between a traditional IRA deductible, which is what we normally think of, and the non-deductible traditional IRA, which most people don't pay attention to. But there's reasons to pay attention to that, and I'll go over that in a little while. Then we have the Roth IRA. The Roth IRA is you put money into it on an after-tax basis, and the earnings become tax-free as long as you let it grow and take out a qualified distribution at some point in the future, or your heirs do when they've inherited it. So, you know, why would we put after-tax dollars in a non-deductible IRA when we could put after-tax dollars in a Roth IRA and have it all tax-free? Well, we're going to talk about that. There's income limits, so we'll talk about that. Something called the SEP IRA, not so many people have these, so I'm probably not going to spend too much time on this. It's a simplified employee pension. In my head, I always just say self-employed pension, but it is a simplified employee pension for self-employed people. And for their employees of self-employed individuals, but it is only employer contributions. There's also something called a simple IRA, and we'll go over some of the limits on that. And before I talk about more of the retirement accounts we have, I have Angelo from Bethlehem on line one. Hi, Angelo.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, good.
How can I help you?
Well, my wife is on Social Security,
uh-huh.
The kind that they don't file, they don't have to file.
Okay.
So 1 year I filed with her, and then I had to pay tax on all her Social Security because she doesn't have anything taken out.
Okay.
The next year I filed single, and I got crushed with taxes. And then I found out that I could do filing, married filing separately.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think is the best way to do it?
Angelo, are you and your wife both 65 or older?
No, we're younger yet. We're in our 50s.
but your wife's getting Social Security, so she must be getting like disability.
Disabled.
Okay, all right.
Right.
But she gets Medicare then, doesn't she, if she's on Social Security, or unless she's covered on an employer plan that you have?
She's covered on the employer plan.
Okay,
right.
All right. It really depends. What I have seen, Angelo, is sometimes the married filing joint, usually if you're using tax software, it will tell you which is the better way to go. Occasionally, and it's really only occasionally, that married filing separate is better than married filing joint. But your situation could be one of those situations where married filing separate might be better. Yes, you don't file single, but married filing separate is almost like a single filing. So you would each file separately. If her Social Security might not be taxable, but then you're in a higher tax bracket.
Correct.
Filing separate. What I want to caution you on is if at some point she becomes eligible for Medicare, or you decide to put her on Medicare, and that might be something you could explore, because if she's on Social Security disability, sometimes she'd be eligible for Medicare. That might make your own retirement plan cheaper, and that might save you some money. I don't know. But for people who do married filing separate who have Medicare, there could be some additional Medicare premiums you have to pay. Because
$500 and some dollars a month is what it came to, and I thought, well, I'm already paying $500 with my insurance, so I'll just keep her on my plan.
Okay,
that's
yeah.
That's for Medicare B.
Yeah. So sometimes, though, when you file separately, the Social Security Administration may put a surcharge on the Medicare premiums. It all depends, because there's different income thresholds. But I would really say, Angelo, it's hard to tell with just over the, calling in for me to know which would be better for you. It kind of depends if it's just wages. Do you have capital gains? Do you have any kind of itemized deductions? There's a number of factors, but I would say that it sounds like your situation may swing that it would be better for married filing separate, as if you don't have the Medicare, premium income related monthly adjustment amount, to factor
in. I mean, the first time I filed single, I owed $10,000. What the heck did I do wrong?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then when I filed with her, I only owed $7,000.
Right.
So I thought, well, maybe it's better to do it with her, even though I had to pay the tax on her income that she got.
Exactly. Generally, married filing joint, and I have to say that on air, because it's generally married filing joint is better. Married filing separate often is not, but you might have one of those situations where it could be, because 85% of her Social Security is included for income. I don't know if you hand wrote your tax return or if you use software.
I use software.
Okay. Yeah, so that would limit it. Now, one thing you might want to think about, since we're talking about retirement accounts tonight, is, and if you have cash flow available, you could fund a deductible IRA for your wife based on your earnings. So if she's over 50, you could make a deductible IRA contribution on her behalf if you have that kind of cash flow available, and based on your earnings, and that would save a little bit of income tax for you. And then when you're both retired, you could maybe go and convert it to Roth IRA when you're in a low tax bracket. So that might be a way to save taxes. Fund a deductible IRA for your wife. It's called a spousal IRA.
So if I did
IRA.
The maximum of $12,000 in a fundable IRA for her, that would be $12,000 tax write-off?
Well, she can only do $7,000 if she's over 50. She could only do $7,000. And if you're not a participant in a plan at your own work, then you could also do $7,000 if you're over 50. if you have an employer provided plan at work, then I think you could only do the spousal IRA because you could be contributing through your work. There's certain income limitations on that.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, I work for the government, so I have one of them thrift savings.
Okay. Okay, well, you could definitely make a contribution for her and get that deduction for, in fact, depending on, yeah, I think your income might be over the threshold for you to be able to do it, but you could always, you know, ask TurboTax. Usually you can put it in there and it'll let you know if you can do it or not, but that would be another way to save.
Oh, I never knew that. Thank you.
Okay, all right, spousal IRA.
Have a good day.
Thank you, Angelo.
Bye.
We have to take a quick break, but I have Ann, hang on the line. We will come back to you as soon. And we have Ann from Bethlehem, and then I had a question from Ann in Bath off air. So we'll take those questions when we come back from this next break. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
We hear so much in the financial news today. How do you sort through it all, and how does it affect your financial life? Join me, Lori Siebert, CPA and Certified Financial Planner, each week for Your Financial Choices, Wednesday nights from 6 to 7. Together, we'll discuss ways to empower you in planning for your financial decisions, including taxes, retirement, and estate issues. We'll take your calls and online questions right here on WDIY. Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we have Ann from Bethlehem. Ann, can you hear me?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Ann. How can I help you?
Hi. My question regards the recent third stimulus payment and determining who's eligible. I filed my 2020 taxes 2 days after the announcement came out.
Right.
And in 2019, my income exceeded being eligible. But in 2020, as far as I know, I'm eligible as a single female. The threshold. So are they going to, which one? Mm-hmm. I hope they're going to use the lower income return.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Anne. They will use the 2020 return. So what will happen, the third stimulus payment, they were trying to push out as quickly as possible. So for people who had not filed their 2020 return yet, they were basing it on 2019. And for people who then filed their 2020 return, hoping, gosh, now I filed, am I going to get the stimulus? They might not have gotten it in time.
Right.
And I kept worrying that they might have drawn a line in the sand and we're going to make you wait till you filed your 2021 return. But what I've been reading is the IRS is going to continue to revisit the 2020 returns up through, I think, 90 days after the filing date. Mm-hmm. So you may not have seen the third stimulus payment yet, but if you got your return filed, a couple weeks ago, it might take them a little time, but I think you could watch for that $1,400 to come as long as a single person you're within the limit. And you know, they did lower the limit. So for, and don't tell me your income at all, but for single people, they lowered the phase out range. I think it's 75,000 to 80,000. So if it's under 75, you automatically got it. If it's over 80, you're not going to get it. If it's between 75 and 80, then you're going to get a phase out. The income limits were much higher for the first two stimulus payments. So
right.
I think you just have to watch for that. And if on your tax return you put direct deposit information, if you had a refund, then we're hoping that they'll automatically put it in your bank account. You'll have to watch it for it. But I think they also, some people were getting letters or notices. So it hasn't always been a consistent delivery.
Mm-hmm.
So you just kind of want to watch for it. But if for some reason you don't get it and you fight for it, and I think if you go on the IRS's website, they have now put a tracker there. If you go to irs.gov and, search for it, you can probably track to see if you're, how you're going to get it. But if for some reason people don't get it for 2020, we are going to have another chance to get it for people when we file their 2021 tax return.
Oh, okay. Okay. So is it a fair assumption that whichever year you were eligible, they will use that tax return, 19 or 20, or not?
Right. If someone was eligible for it in 19 but not 20, and they hadn't filed their 20 yet, so they were eligible based on 2019, and they paid you the $1,400, and then you file your 2020 return, your income's $1 million. They're not going to take it back from you.
Okay.
And if someone wasn't eligible in 2019, but now they are in 2020, they'll pay it to you. And if you get that before you file your 2021, and maybe your 2021 income put you over, then you also skated through with it.
Wow. Okay. I've been asking around. Nobody's known the answer. And I am so glad you responded. And it was very clear. And I really like your show. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. Have a good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.
We also had Anne with an E from Bath call, and she had a question about that she had a small pension with an ex-employer, and it's just sitting there, and she wants to put it in an IRA. Which type? Well, a pension, in my mind, a pension is maybe a defined benefit plan where someone's going to pay you so much per month. A small 401k or a small 403b is a defined contribution plan, a plan that you put money into and the employer put money into. And so what we can do with a 401k may be different than what we could do with a defined benefit pension plan. So I'm going to assume this is a 401k or a 403b, something, Anne, that you put money in or the employer put money in over time. And you can roll that over to an IRA, or you could roll it over to a Roth. You're asking which type should you roll it over to? I would say it would depend on what your tax situation is. When you say small, if you're talking like $4,000 and you're retired now and you have just Social Security, you may not even end up paying tax on that rollover. So if that would be the case, then I would say we want to look at rolling it over to a Roth, a rollover into a Roth. You would pay the tax on it when you roll it over then. If your income is high and you don't want to at this time roll it over into a Roth because you don't want to pay the taxes on it, you could roll it over into a regular IRA, tax-free. It's a trustee-to-trustee transfer, basically. There's some steps you have to do, but you could take that employer plan and roll it over into an IRA, a rollover IRA. And then at such time, maybe when you are in a lower tax bracket, maybe in your future retirement years, maybe before you start collecting Social Security or before you have required minimum distributions out of an IRA, when your income's still low, you could look at converting that IRA then to a Roth, over time, a little bit at a time. You don't have to convert it all at once. So you have some options. If you're in a really low income tax bracket and you think you're going to be in a higher tax bracket in the future, you could roll it over to a Roth. If you're in a high tax bracket now and think you're going to be in a lower tax bracket in the future, I would probably roll it over to the IRA tax-free. And then when I'm in a lower tax bracket, I would maybe work on converting it over time. If this was a pension, you would have to find out if the employer, your ex-employer, provides a lump sum option on a pension. More and more retirement accounts, more and more employers are providing lump sum options on pensions, and they may allow you to roll that over. Okay? And when we come back from the break, I'll tell you a little bit more about some steps you might have to do to get that rolled over. Okay, folks, we're at the halfway point. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Shondi Gray. It is now 6:30 and 54 with clear skies. Tonight, low around 48. Thursday is going to be foggy, partly sunny, high 69. Thursday night, showers, low 58. Friday, more showers, high 75. Friday night, low around 42. And Saturday is going to be sunny, high 66. And Saturday night, low 43. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shondi. I have a couple comments for two of our callers. So Anne from Bath, I want to tell you a little bit about rolling over. And Angelo, if you're still listening, I want to tell you something too about that spousal IRA. So regarding the rolling over from a former employer, one of the things I was going to touch on a little bit later in the show, but I want to quickly mention as part of my answer to Anne, is if you're rolling over a former plan like a 401k to an IRA, you want to check for a few things before you roll over. You also want to look to see if you have any after-tax dollars in the plan. And sometimes we'll see that if someone was employed pre-1986 with an employer, because back then a lot of people were doing after-tax contributions. So we want to see if there's any after-tax money in your 401k before you roll it over, because you could roll that over to a Roth IRA. At the same time, you could roll over the after-tax amounts to the Roth and the pre-tax amounts to an IRA. You also want to check if you have any employer stock in a 401k before you roll it over, because employer stock has special tax characteristics. It's called net unrealized appreciation, NUA. You always want to check that first. What is the value of that stock today, and what is the cost basis of that stock? Because there's special rules, they can allow you to take out the employer stock and pay tax on the cost basis of it. And that could be something very attractive. It all depends on the situation. And before you roll anything over, look for after-tax monies or NUA on employer stock. And then typically, if you have a statement from the employer plan, there's going to be a phone number on there. Generally, there's a custodian who manages the 401k plan. It could be, you know, an insurance company. It could be one of the big brokers. But there's generally a phone number on there. You can call them and say, you know, I want to roll over this plan. What do I need? Generally, they're going to sell everything in the plan and send you a check. And then you can say, I want that check made payable to, you know, Charles Schwab or Vanguard. And they'll make it for your benefit payable directly to the custodian. And then you deposit that check into your either current IRA or current Roth that you have, or one that you set up. All right. So it's usually a phone call, and that's usually what they do, which is why you have to make sure to check out if there's any employer stock or after tax money in that. Angelo, I want to go back to you for a minute if you're still listening. I mentioned the spousal IRA, if you've got the money to fund it. You know, we're in 2021, but if you're looking at a 2020 tax return, you still can fund a 2020 IRA. The IRS gives us until the due date of the tax return to fund an IRA and get the deduction on our prior year return. The reason they do that is because sometimes we don't know what our income is. We don't know if we're eligible to do it. But based on the income that you had mentioned to me and your wife not working, I suspect that she would qualify for the spousal IRA, and you can set up an IRA for her if she doesn't already have one. And then you can put the money in the IRA, and you have to tell the bank or the custodian, wherever you set up the IRA, that it's a 2020 contribution. And that's how you get the deduction on your tax return. And you can even file your tax return before you fund it. I used to have a a client that we would do his tax return lickety-split. First thing, he'd get his refund, and then he would use his refund to fund the IRA by April 15th. This year, they've extended the due date of the return, and they've also extended the date that we can fund the IRAs and the Roth IRAs to May 17th. So you have time. And Angelo, if you already filed the 2020 tax return and you decide to do this, you could always amend the return to report the deductible IRA. All right. So I hope that helps. It's so exciting, all of these questions. I love them. So if you do have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So as I mentioned, we've been talking about retirement accounts and IRAs and Roth IRAs. And to our caller, Angela, we mentioned there could be an opportunity for a spousal IRA. Generally, one of the first things I wanted to mention in talking about the different retirement accounts was some broad, big picture items. And I've loved the questions, but I haven't been able to get to those big items. So let me do that now. You need to have earnings to fund retirement accounts of any kind. So when we go back to Angela's question, I just told him his wife could do one, but she's not working. Well, there's something called the spousal IRA. And the IRS allows a spouse to use the earning spouse's wages. So in this case, if Angelo's making, I'm making up numbers, if Angelo's making $40,000 and he has $7,000 in the bank and his wife doesn't have an IRA, she could put $7,000 into a deductible IRA. It's called spousal IRA. And we do that on our tax return. And generally, the software will tell you if you can do it or if it's limited for some reason. So, for example, if I have, two spouses and one makes $5,000, they're retired, and one makes $5,000 and one makes $6,000, and they both want to fund IRAs, I would have to tell them they can only fund it to the amount of earnings, five or six. So it's the amount of earnings and or, the max contribution that's allowed, or may be further limited because of certain income limitations that the IRS puts on us. Those further income limitations that the IRS might put on us in funding IRAs would be if I'm a participant in a retirement plan already. The IRS says if you're already a participant in an employer plan at work, then these IRAs are really for people who don't have that. But they say, hey, but if you're a really good saver, you could maybe do the employer plan and your own IRA. It just depends on how much income you have. All right. And for a deductible IRA, the income limits are lower than for a Roth IRA. So even though you might have an employer plan at work and you can fund maybe your spousal IRA, you still might be able to do a Roth IRA. Because the income limitations on the Roth IRA are higher. You don't get a deduction for the Roth IRA, but you get tax-free growth and earnings on the Roth IRA. So, for example, married filing joint, the limitation is $196,000 to $206,000. That's a phase-out. If you make over $206,000, the IRS isn't going to let you do the Roth contribution, the regular Roth contribution. But if you make under $196,000, you can do a Roth. So sometimes we'll have one spouse can do the Roth and the other spouse can do the deductible IRA. For a traditional IRA deduction, if you're both participants or one's a participant in a, if you're both participants in a retirement plan, your income's under 104 if you're married filing joint, 65 if single, you could do the employer plan and a deductible IRA. But if one spouse is working and the other spouse is not working, the phase-out limits go way up for the spousal IRA. And that is for married filing joint, the covered spouse, the phase-out range for the non-covered spouse is $196,000. So it's quite hefty there for people to be able to fund a spousal IRA. So I hope that helps. And Angelo, I hope that helps you to kind of play with your tax planning and your return for 2020 if you haven't filed it already. Maybe that'll help with the taxes a little bit. What's really interesting is if your income was even a little bit lower, sometimes when you do those deductible IRAs, it actually reduces the taxable Social Security. I think your income might be too high, Angelo, to further reduce the taxable Social Security. But in a lot of situations, we can reduce that because Social Security is taxed based on how much other income you have on the return. So if we can get a deductible IRA in there, sometimes that helps lower the taxable Social Security. Okay. Let me kind of go back to then a little bit of the overview of the retirement accounts we're talking about. And this is great. The questions have all kind of fed into what I wanted to talk about tonight. So it's been great. And the phone number again is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me or off air, whatever's more comfortable. You can give your question to Lori. She'll bring it in and I'll just answer it that way. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So some of the other, the IRAs I've been talking about, traditional IRA, Roth IRA, SEP IRA, simple IRA, those are individual retirement accounts. We also have something called a defined contribution plan. That's typically when we're working and our employer provides an employer-provided plan, hence why we don't have the word individual, because it's an employer plan available to employees meeting particular criteria to be eligible to participate in the employer plan. Defined contribution plans, 401ks, 403bs, have different thresholds and amounts of contributions that we can make as well. There's also, and I meant to differentiate here, I kind of got off track. There is sometimes a defined contribution plan that an employer may have where it's just profit sharing, where the employees don't put money in. I really don't see that often. The main plans that we see for people are 401ks or 403bs. So let's talk about the big picture items. I already mentioned you have to have earnings to fund retirement accounts, either your earnings or your spouse's earnings. So it could be a spousal IRA. This is different than doing a conversion or inheriting. This is your retirement account, all right? The contributions would be limited, as I mentioned, to earnings or the contribution max based on the IRS limitations. IRS looks at IRAs all as one, no matter how many accounts you have, unless you're doing something called the 72T. 72T is an IRS code section for people who want to avoid a 10% penalty on early distribution from an IRA. If they elect to make systematic periodic distributions over certain life expectancy and factors, then you could avoid a 10% penalty. That's a 72T. And the IRS lets us differentiate the IRA accounts. We could say we're going to do it all out of, the IRA account over at XYZ brokerage firm and not the other three I have over here. That is just the only time I think they do that. It's very unusual. And 72Ts, I really don't see them at all that often. I think I've probably had three in my whole career. That is really if you're under the normal retirement age for IRAs of 59 and a half and you really are desperate and need money. That is one way to get it without a 10% penalty. Still have the income tax on it. But for the most part, when we talk about IRAs, when we're talking about figuring out your required minimum distribution or figuring out the allocation of after-tax money in an IRA, when you start taking distributions out, the IRS looks at your IRAs all as one. Okay? IRAs and Roths are typically used by people who may not have employer-provided plans, as I mentioned. That's why we call them individual. Then we don't have to worry about income limitations because if you don't have an employer plan, the income limitations don't really apply. It wouldn't matter. And it also doesn't matter if you have a plan from a former employer. Some people think, well, I have a retirement plan, where I used to work, so now I can't do a Roth or an IRA. No, that's not the case. It's if you are a current participant in a retirement plan, then you would use your retirement plan at work, possibly use IRAs. But if you don't have a retirement plan, you're not a current participant, then we don't need to worry about the income limitations on IRAs. And then I'll tell you when we come back from this next break, a little nugget that might help some people who may be retired but still getting W-2s. I'll tell you about that when we come back. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Are you interested in inspiring and informing future generations through WDIY's programming? A gift through your will, retirement plan, or estate plan is a wonderful legacy to leave to those that will need a trusted place to hear what's going on in the world. For information about naming WDIY as a beneficiary, please call 610-694-8100 or visit wdiy.org/legacy.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. And podcasts of prior shows are also available at yourfinancialchoices.com and wdiy.org under Public Affairs. I wanted to just add, and I'm sitting here making sure I cover a number of things. I think that what I will do is probably tag on to next week's show some of the information on retirement accounts that I'm not going to be able to get through tonight, because I'd love the questions. I would prefer to have questions all hour long. But I will tag on some of the information, I think, relating to 401ks and 403bs and that type of retirement accounts next week. I'll add to that because I do want to cover a couple things. The phone number again, 610-758-8810. The little nugget I wanted to add is we occasionally will see someone retire and continue to get W-2s. Because why? Because they might have stock options. And when someone exercises stock options after they retire, quite often there's a vesting schedule for those, and they might vest over time, over a few years, even after retirement. And when they exercise those stock options, it becomes W-2 income to that person. And they are no longer working at the company. They're no longer an active participant in a retirement plan. You can tell by looking at your W-2, there's a box that says retirement plan. And if that box is checked on your W-2, it means you're a participant in a retirement plan. If the box is not checked, you're not a participant in a retirement plan. But guess what? Those stock options, the income from the stock options counts as earnings. And those earnings can be used to fund a retirement account. So you might have stock options that with income of $250,000, you really hit it big with whatever company you worked for, exercise these stock options, and you're not a participant in a retirement account, you could do a deductible IRA. And you could do a spousal deductible IRA. So that is something to think about when you might be someone who's retired but getting these stock options. You could, do that. Sometimes people get W-2s and it's not stock options and it could be deferred comp. That's a different story. You can't do deductible IRAs based on or counted as earnings, I should say. You can't count it as earnings when it's deferred compensation. That's compensation you earned in the past. It's just paying out in the future. And that is not the kind of income that we can do deductible IRAs or Roth IRAs on. Okay? But really important for people who might have stock options, who might have retired, who are not current participants in retirement plans, you could do deductible IRAs based on that type of income. So keep that in mind. Let's see. I wanted to also make sure I talked about, because I think this is something we don't talk about often enough, is the non-deductible IRA. For people who've may have too much income to do a Roth IRA, you might be able to do something called the backdoor Roth, where you can make a non-deductible contribution to an IRA. And then after a period of time, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, 2 months, you could convert that to a Roth. And you have basis in it. So if I am over 50 and I make a contribution to a non-deductible IRA, I can't deduct it because I am a participant in a plan at work. I can't deduct it, so it's a non-deductible IRA. I put $7,000 in it, and I wait a couple weeks. I keep it in cash. I don't invest it. I wait a few weeks, and then I convert it to a Roth. When I convert it, it's a distribution from an IRA, but it's not taxable because I have basis in it. I didn't take a deduction for that money. I used after-tax dollars, so I have a basis in that IRA, and when I take that distribution out, none of it's taxable. Now I've converted that to the Roth. Now the Roth grows tax-free. That's for situations where your income's too high to fund an IRA, a Roth, and you can do it through this non-deductible IRA gizmo. Now, remember, though, here's the little caveat. If you already have other IRAs outside of this one, you have maybe a rollover IRA or some other type of deductible IRA you've done in the past, the IRS looks at your IRAs all as one. So if I have basis of $7,000 in my IRA and my total IRAs are only $7,000, then absolutely I can convert that to a Roth and not pay any tax on that conversion because I have $7,000 value, $7,000 basis. But if I have $100,000 in an IRA and I only have $7,000 of basis, when I convert $7,000, most of that would be income taxable on the conversion. So you want to be careful of that. But, I mean, for years I had a couple attorneys who did non-deductible IRAs every single year. There is no income limitation for a non-deductible IRA. And back then, we didn't have backdoor Roths. So they wanted the deferral. They wanted the deferral on the income they were earning on that money for as long as they could get it. So they were doing non-deductible IRA contributions every single year. We kept track of how much that added up to, and that was their basis. So let's pretend they did it for 10 years at $5,000 a year. That's $50,000 of non-deductible contributions they made into their IRA, and that was basis. And let's pretend that was the only IRA they had, and it had earnings. And after 10 years, it was worth $80,000. Well, now I have an $80,000 IRA with $50,000 of basis. If I retire and I decide to convert the whole 80, I'm only going to pay tax on the 30 because I have basis of 50. All right? Now, in that story, if that really was all I had, nowadays we would probably just convert every year. But back then, there wasn't, you know, we weren't so clever back then. And you could build up a lot of basis. So there are a number of ways that people build up after-tax basis in their IRAs. Years ago, again, if people rolled over their whole 401k to an IRA, a lot of times they rolled over the after-tax basis as well. So that after-tax basis is now locked into that 401k or into that IRA rollover, and you're not going to be able to just convert the after-tax amount once it's rolled over into the IRA. Now it just becomes basis for the whole IRA. So 401ks that had after-tax basis, if they were all rolled over to the IRA, never separated into the Roth, then you're going to have basis forever in that IRA. And that would continue on to your beneficiaries as well. And there's a calculation, a horrible calculation for that every year. You have to add up all your IRA accounts and keep track of the cost basis and file a form 8606 to calculate the taxable portion of your withdrawal each year based on that allocation. Funding IRAs, I want to go back to that for a moment. You have until the due date of the tax return. And this year, again, the due date has been extended to May 17th. Frankly, I was not sure the IRS had actually extended that. And it's interesting to me that when you try to go Google something like, did the IRS extend the time to fund an IRA? all kinds of articles come up. You get things from, you know, the news sites and Bloomberg. But why it never comes up from the IRS in the top of the feed always is incredible to me. The IRS doesn't seem to update their website as fast as the news organizations seem to get this information. But it did come up that the IRS has extended our time to fund the IRAs. This rarely has happened. I know last year we had it, and now this year we have it until May 17th. It makes sense, though, because if they've extended the time to file, I might not know if someone's eligible to make that IRA contribution until I do their tax return. And if I'm not doing their tax return until May 10th, because I, you know, had 1,000 other tax returns to do, then I wouldn't know how much to tell them to fund it for 2020 if I don't have that information until, you know, May 10th when we're filing the return. All right. Because a lot of the tax preparers are behind. These stimulus payments have really, really put a wrench in the preparation of returns this year, because there's a lot of information that we have to find out. Did the person get the first stimulus? Did they get the second stimulus? How much did they get of each? And a lot of people, you know, didn't realize they really were going to have to keep track of that. And folks have told us they didn't get the stimulus payment. And when we push and we kind of say, really, it looks like you should have. Did you get it? And then we find out, yes, they did. So that really has kind of slowed down a lot of things. Plus, many of us are still working remotely, and it complicates the drop-off of tax information, the delivery of tax information, the staff working on the tax information. Everything is slowed down quite a bit, so we really appreciate having that extra month. The time to file estimated tax payments or quarterly payments has not been extended. That is supposed to still be April 15th. This is also throwing a wrench in the system, because we often don't know what your quarterly payment is until we do your tax return. So you might think, well, I have till May 15th or May 17th to do my tax return. I'm not going to worry about it yet. And then we find out you owe quarterlies and they were due April 15th. Now you might be late. I really, really thought the IRS would come through and kind of update that and give us till May 15th. We haven't heard anything yet. We also are waiting to hear about the unemployment and for people who have already filed. So I'm going to talk more about that next week, hopefully, because I'm hoping by next week we will have those clarifications. They said last week that they would provide guidance in the next several days, and I haven't seen all of that guidance, exactly what they're going to do. We were given some guidance of how to handle it in the software. If our software providers had not yet updated the software, well, they can't update the software yet because they didn't know how they were going to do it. So it just has added a lot of complications for tax preparers and taxpayers in knowing what to do and how to do all of this stuff. So next week, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to piggyback on my topics of updates on the stimulus, the filing dates, and amendments, because we thought we were going to have to amend tax returns for the changes in the unemployment compensation. We're hoping that we're not going to have to file amendments. The IRS is hoping that they will be able to figure it out for the people who already filed their tax returns, who qualify for the exclusion on the unemployment compensation of $10,200. If you're making less than $150,000, and that applies to, if there's two filers, it would apply to both. The IRS is hoping that they will be able to calculate those numbers. You're welcome to let other folks know about us here at WDIY 88.1. And if people can't listen between 6 and 7 on Wednesday nights, they can always find programs, podcast of prior shows on WDIY.org under Public Affairs, and look for a topic that's interesting to you. Otherwise, we will catch you next week. So coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.